Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak up. Kōrerotia. Tune in as our guests speak up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
Good morning, Telefalava. Kia ora, Bulavanaka. Ni hao. Buenos dias. Bonjour. This is Speak Up Kōrerotia, ko Speak Up Kōrerotia tēnei. I'm Sally Carlton, and I'm really excited today to be talking about language learning in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We're thinking about this discussion right now in April 2026 because the national curriculum is out for consultation and one of the subjects under consideration is languages. And it seems really timely that we are discussing this given that language learning, I guess we'll come to this, but may well be in a bit of a crisis here in this country. I'm so excited to have four guests on the panel. You guys all come from slightly different perspectives, but all passionate about language learning. And I guess just to make it clear, when we're talking about language learning in this show, we're talking specifically about, I guess, international languages. So not English or English as a second language, or Te Reo Māori or New Zealand Sign Language. This show, we're specifically thinking about languages from other countries. And you're all passionate about that. Yeah, this really drives me as well. So I would love to hear from each of you. Ko Waikwe, who are you? What kind of mahi do you do? How have you come to this position in your lives that you're on this show today? Stephen, how about we start with you?
Kia ora koutou, ko Stephen Epstein toko ingoa, and I teach in the School of Languages and Cultures in Victoria University of Wellington. I suppose I am here because a love for language has structured my entire life up to this point, and I have a very broad experience in different languages. My PhD was in classics, so I came here and initially was teaching Greek and Latin, but over the course of my career, from very early on, I've been interested in East Asian languages and cultures and civilizations. And so I teach Asian studies here, and in my own work, I translate Korean literature and Indonesian literature. I also sit on the executive committee of the New Zealand Esperanto Association. I'm very involved with the language exchange that goes on here on a weekly level in Wellington, and also within our Lang 301. Teaching at university, I may have a different perspective on what's going on in the tertiary education system, but it is intimately related with what's happening in the primary and secondary sector. But also I do a session for our kind of communal third year course right at the start about tips and tricks for language learning, because I devote a lot of time on a daily basis to consuming comprehensible input in a variety of international and sometimes national languages.
Thank you, Stephen. How about Fesaitu?
No, I am Maori Tenengach to the Koa, Nisambula Venaka, Yandra Morena. I am the CEO for the Center for Pacific Languages here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. I lead the work in revitalization and sustainability for our Pacific languages, especially for languages that are endangered right now. We have about 12 Pacific languages. I come from a very small island as well in Rotuma, part of Fiji politically, but noted as part of Polynesia as well. Those languages that we teach are part of a lineup of the Ministry for Pacific People on the 12 languages for language weeks here in New Zealand. And so I'm looking forward to this Korero and Talanoa today as we share in terms of Haifenganga in regards to languages that are important to us as Pacific people. And we all know that New Zealand is part of the Pacific as well. And so this Talanoa, as I share with you, will be a space to explore and support the work of our languages across, not just here in New Zealand, but across the Pacific regions and globally as well, for Yexia.
Thank you so much. And your colleague, Lynn.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Letua Lalimaletua Lynn Pavihi. I am of Niue and Samoan descent. My background is in education. I've done 20 years in the primary setting as a teacher and also worked as a deputy associate principal at Favona School in South Auckland for 5 years, in which I established and launch our very first Niue bilingual unit in the world. I am a strong advocate for Vangahau Niue, an endangered language, and also very passionate about education and languages. I have worked also in secondary school with maths extension, especially for our Pasifika students. But the last year I have worked in Centre for Pacific Languages as the lead for learning, development, and training. So I look after all our languages. At the moment, we are in term one of our language classes. We have 30 language classes, both face-to-face and online, that we offer. And we've also got our term two enrollments coming up. So we're very, very well engaged with our teaching and also the delivering of our languages that Itu said before. And we also have got our short courses in which we have Tokpisin, Bislama, and Pidgin Solomon that we're also offering coming up in the next few weeks. So that's a little bit about me. Whakaue lahi.
And can I just check, when I looked at the website of the Centre for Pacific Languages, it seemed like all your courses are free. Am I right in saying that?
Correct. Yeah. So the courses that we currently offer are free language classes. We're thinking of, you know, going global, but that's yet to happen. But it's only free for residents here in Aotearoa.
Amazing resource, though. And our final guest is Stephanie.
Kia ora koutou, ko Stephanie toku ingoa. Minasan ohayou gozaimasu, Stephanie tomoshimasu. I was a teacher of Japanese for 25 years at the largest secondary school in the country, and 10 years of that I was head of department. In 2017, I moved into professional learning for teachers, and I worked at the University of Auckland until the end of last year. Unfortunately, the university decided to get out of professional learning and for secondary teachers. So one of my colleagues and I actually decided to start our own business because, of course, the ministry was still really interested in providing the work and keeping the contracts going. And so this year, 27th of January, we started Language Circle, and we have the two contracts that the ministry lets to support the teaching and learning of languages nationally in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So we literally work from Kaitaia to Invercargill, supporting teachers across the sectors, so primary, intermediate, and secondary, to deliver best outcomes for students in the learning languages area of the New Zealand curriculum. So I'm very involved and very passionate about the delivery of learning languages, and I'm really, really distraught about the current situation that we find ourselves in. And this has been, you know, for a while now that we've seen the landscape for teachers and students become ever harder for them to participate and gain proficiency in languages, at particularly at high school. So that's me. Kia ora.
Kia ora. So I guess, Stephanie, that kind of begs the question then, what is the language learning landscape in Aotearoa at the moment?
It's complex because the curriculum, the current curriculum, which came in 2007 as a draft and was mandated in 2010, really codified that languages were no longer a compulsory component of the curriculum. So I think it's page 44 says there are 8 learning areas of the curriculum. 7 of those must be provided by boards of trustees and principals, but the learning languages area is an endeavour to provide, a nice to have, for years 7 to 10 only. So since that time, of course, with a compacted and squeezed curriculum, so the time given to languages in schools has become ever more squeezed, and we've got this proliferation now of things like taster courses, where students might do a term of one language, a term of another language, and so on. So they then get to choose a language that they might continue with, say at year 10, but still they don't get the full year's amount of hours delivered to them, so that by the time they're in year 11, beginning qualifications in the language, they really haven't had much exposure. And very little will have been happening at primary and intermediate levels. So we're asking students as well to make their choices, their subject choices for the future, based on a very small exposure to languages. So we don't give them the opportunity to feel any success or experience with that language before they're being asked to make a very hard choice about their future, because most schools as well say when you come out of that language, you can't go back in. The other thing that happens in particularly secondary schools, because languages are so marginalised, the timetabling might mean that multiple levels are put together in the same class, so year 11, 12 and 13, multiple qualification or exam types are put together in the same class. So a school might do NCEA and IB, and those students are all in the same class together. Or they might do NCEA and Cambridge, and the students are all in the same class together. We've even seen a situation where a teacher is asked to have students from different languages in the same class, where the senior leadership says, well, you can teach French, so Spanish isn't that different, so we'll put all the French and Spanish students in the same class. It's just crazy, and a real misunderstanding about the nature of language learning, the uniqueness of each language, and the time that it takes to become proficient. Students need little and often exposure to a language to build proficiency. And what they're getting is disconnected, little discrete moments of time that don't build up to very much. And that's particularly at the primary and intermediate level, because again, you've got teachers that don't have very much specialist training in languages. At Auckland University, I think their primary pre-service teachers might get about 4 hours around, you know, how to teach learning languages. So they really don't know about accepted pedagogy, the best way to go about it. They may also be monolingual themselves. They've never had a good opportunity to learn a language, so it's a very hard place to enter into. And so those students don't get a lot of exposure. There's a lot wrong.
Our Pacific languages, I think, have come from a point where we have to look at the endangerment of our languages. And we sit here in the Pacific. Aotearoa is part of the Pacific. However, the challenges and the complexity as the Ministry of Education is that where do our Pacific languages fit into the curriculum? That's the biggest question that I'm asking. While the Centre for Pacific Languages have a NZQA program that looks from a minimum age of 16 and above, that's we are working as well, as Alituala raised, in terms of the space. We're not only through government support, it's very minimal, and also the demand in terms of people wanting to reconnect with language, because of English has become a predominant language right now. And so the challenges is that the Ministry of Education has to consider looking at that space and how do they support in terms of language learning. If we look at the likes of English, Mandarin and Hindi, French and Spanish is not far behind in terms of the well-spoken language across the world. But our Pacific languages, is that's where my real concern is. It's not just advocating, but we know that it continues to decline here in Aotearoa, especially for our endangered, our realm languages, which New Zealand is supposed to be looking after, Cook Island, Niue, and Tokelau. And these are the three most endangered languages in terms of speakers here in New Zealand, if we look at the data. And that's where my concern is, where do we support? And if it's not in the curriculum for the Ministry of Education, if it's not been pushed forward, then it's left to the community and the likes of us to try and figure out how do we keep it alive. For me, it's just being here on this platform to acknowledge that we are facing a real challenge. If we look at the Stats New Zealand data for our Pacific languages, it continues to decline here. three realm countries that we really need to figure out how we're going to do that. Rotuma, as I'm from Rotuma, I'm not only a facilitator and a translator and also part of our interpretation team. Also, these are areas that we are finding it difficult. And I think Stephanie raised it very well. Teaching the language is not an easy fit to get facilitators and teachers in our language as well, because there's no real pathway for employment for people to actually say, look, I'm going to go and do this, and I have a real job after that, because it's not the priority for any government right now. But I think they really need to look at how do we put this as a subject across our Pacific languages in schools so that we can keep the language alive. And it has to start not just from our homes, but also start from education. There's so much research that says that bilingualism and multilingualism is a big way that helps not only our young people to be confident, but it ways to help see the world from a different lens for Yexia.
Couldn't agree more. At the moment, it appears that the ministry is really only interested in proficiency in English, and they don't really care about all of that cultural knowledge and heritage that students come in with at the age of five. We've got, you know, statistics that show that a child might be bilingual at the age of five coming to school, and by the time they're nine, they've lost their home language and they've become monolingual. That's an absolutely appalling thing that's happened, that we don't understand the importance of, and that link between language, culture, and identity to keep those things alive in the classroom, and the advantage that it has to the child to have those things maintained in the primary school. There's just such a huge gap between what we know is really good pedagogy and fabulous outcomes for students and what's actually happening in policy and in the way the draft curriculum has been put together and presented.
I guess I'll jump in at this point and say I am not especially qualified to comment on what happens in terms of policy in the primary and secondary level, but it's very apparent that in the tertiary sector, we're at the mercy in terms of student numbers at what happens at an earlier level. And so we've seen that as a result of ongoing cuts, that our numbers have declined. We have tried to put in place various changes in the curriculum. We've instituted a Bachelor of Global Studies degree, for example, which has re-encouraged students to be learning languages. I think there are a couple of questions, too. And one is what we want to do in terms of heritage languages and supporting people within the community. And then there's the issue of, say, students arriving at university and wanting to become global citizens and international citizens and engaging in it with the world. And although there are connected issues just in terms of language pedagogy within that, there are also some significant differences. But here, I think we clearly want to support what happens at an earlier level as much as possible. I don't know at what point we want to get into thinking about just other changes in the language learning space that have occurred, because there's the issue of what the government can do in a very under-resourced sector, full stop, to try to maintain and support all of these wonderful things that we want to do, and thinking about how we could genuinely support that within individual schools. It might be the case that what the government I have seen needs to do is just be more supportive of heritage languages out in the community for some of what you're talking about. So my partner, actually, she would be starting for the year, picking up today, is a teacher of Korean at some of the intermediate schools in Wellington. And she would have been going up to Maidstone Intermediate, where she's been the last few years. And that's been very successful in encouraging students to engage with Korea. And there are other things that happen with different languages that have appeal for young people through popular culture and the like. I wouldn't say it's the case that interest in foreign languages has declined at all. I think there's a real hunger there. It's more how we can put in place effective mechanisms to maintain it and to just think through and have a strategy. It's just that Aotearoa New Zealand has really not put together a strong or any national language strategy. And I think it starts with just taking the time to do something that is, I wouldn't say it's necessarily taken for granted in other places, but this is an area where we've been particularly lacking, where we might be able to coordinate a larger response.
If I could echo on what Stephanie and Itu have mentioned earlier on in regards to the high need of exposure for our languages, especially our endangered languages. You're blessed if you are in an area or live in an area or attend a school or your children attend a school that have got teachers or educators that are teaching or delivering languages, whatever the language is. And this is really evident in Auckland. You know, there are bilingual schools, immersion schools, language nests from ECE right up to secondary. And then you have, you know, you have those who are very eager, hungry to learn the language, but they live out in other places, other towns. How do we cater for them? How do we cater? You know, there are pockets of language that are taught in different schools around, but there is nothing. If we are to define and really unpack the curriculum at the moment and the learning languages, there is nothing in there that gives more of a, hey, this is the step forward. We are going to go in 10 years' time, we're going to do this. And in 20 years' time, basically, it's similar to all the other subjects. We are teaching this, but we lack the human resources. There's gaps. Like if, I'll give you an example, like our newer bilingual unit that we established in Favona, just that. There's no intermediate that continues it. There's only two secondary schools. There's Alfriston in Manurewa and De La Salle in Mangere. Other than that, where's the continuation? And I also like your idea, Stephen, around having a national language strategy or a key direction. I think schools is good because all the kids go to school until a certain age. And then, you know, for us as Centre for Pacific Languages, we deliver to community groups or to New Zealand residents. You know, what can we do to make sure that we uplift and continue the momentum that have started in schools to continue that? I actually wanted to study languages at Auckland University, but then they had to restructure their course so they didn't offer it anymore. Itu was talking about pathways. You know, there are so many things like, yeah, data, AI, the different levels of languages. What are we talking about? Level one, level two, level three. How are we going to roll that out? Will the government or will the Ministry of Education support languages? Let's just visualize that, because is it really important at the moment? We're not sure. But for me, I'm a strong advocate for languages. And for Centre for Pacific Languages, we are really encouraging people to learn your language, reconnect, and even to the point where some of our learners for CPL have gone back home. From just joining a class and learning a language, they have made the connection. They felt, oh yeah, I think it's a calling. Now I've gone back home. So, you know, these are some of the things that we love for our people, and not just Pacific languages, other languages. You know, we want people, especially those who are of those ethnic groups, to have that connection. Whakawelahi.
There's sort of the three levels, aren't there? There's the heritage or the home language, those who don't necessarily get that around them so much. And then there's the ones who have that native language that's perhaps more spoken, who are of a fluent level. And then there's the ones who may be monolingual, who wish to learn a language. And that complicates the teaching of these languages, is that there are at least three different categories of potential learner. So the teachers need to be equipped to deal with that. There needs to be enough students to make the classes separated. All these sorts of things complicate the situation.
Yes, and adding to that too, we have a qualification system that doesn't recognise that students come in with different amounts of prior knowledge. So in Australia, you can sit exams that are differentiated according to how much language exposure you have. But here in New Zealand, everybody sits the same exam at NCEA, regardless of whether you're a native speaker or you're a heritage speaker, or you're a true second language learner. And that also makes life difficult for people to see themselves being successful with the language. Just as an example, if you look at the NCEA Level 3 Chinese exam, Mandarin exam, it's only pretty much sat by native speakers. Because true second language learner who starts with Mandarin goes, oh, there's all these people in this room who are heritage speakers or native speakers, and I can't compare myself, I can't get as good as that, so they all drop out. If you look at the numbers of students who study Mandarin, they're quite large at primary school, they drop off around year 11 and 12, and then they massively balloon at year 13, because that's all those native speakers that come back in getting credits that they can do really easily. So that doesn't help true second language learners who want to engage with another language and get something out of it, to learn something new about another culture. That also doesn't help the landscape for learning languages in schools.
You mentioned Australia there, Stephanie. How does New Zealand compare to some of the other countries in terms of language learning?
Really poorly. So I think New Zealand is the only country in the OECD that does not have some level of compulsory language learning. So Australia does, and it varies in different states, but they do have compulsion. In the UK, they removed compulsion for a while, then they've restored it because they could see that the numbers of students learning languages was dropping off. And of course, they have, you know, Europe on their doorstep, so they need to have people that can speak in those languages. Canada, of course, has bilingual education nationally. America, I think in different states, they have different policies, but essentially there is compulsory second language learning. And of course, in every country that doesn't have English as one of their main languages, of course, they all learn a second language, at least a second language. In countries where there's, you know, language revitalization, they're taking a plus one approach to it. So if you look at Wales or Scotland, they start with a mother tongue at age of five, and then they do a plus one, plus one, plus one as the child moves through their education. So they're constantly adding languages. They can cope with children coming in with a different mother tongue to English. I don't know why we can't do that here. So there are lots of different models around the world that are very successful in terms of keeping heritage language, mother tongue going, if that mother tongue isn't English, and keep introducing other languages as the child moves through education. They do it very successfully. And I agree with others when they say we need a national languages policy, because if there was something like that that brought in that scope for how do we deal with heritage speakers, how do we deal with native speakers, how do we deal with the realm languages, they need our huge support, what do we do with our official languages, they need our huge support as well. This month actually is the 20th year of bringing in sign language as an official language. And so, you know, they all need different solutions, different support to ensure that they thrive and that those students, those people thrive. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. I think it always starts from the top, and that's the government needs to implement those policies. They set the tone on what people will see. Okay, they care about people and their languages. There has to be an agreed policy or an action plan that people know in the education system across the schools. We need to start implementing this. When we set the tone at the top at a government level, then the people will know that they have to care about these languages. But if they don't put that into policy, what does it matter for the people at the bottom? Sometimes people just go back to, I don't want to say that I am Cook Island, or I'm Niuean, or I'm Tokelauan, or I'm from the Pacific, because then I will be laughed at. Now, if the languages are not given a priority on part of policy and action plan, then you can forget about bringing our people to teach the language. And this is where the issue is that we haven't created at policy level to embed what the implementation of those policies will look like. So if we can't create it at the top, then obviously we're going to still struggle at the bottom year in, year out. So I guess for us, in terms of teaching the language, yeah, we have to meet. We meeting a demand of over 2,500 enrollments every year as per government requirements. When you take that into people's lives and livelihood and how they've come out with feedback that they've connected, it's all about connection and people feel valued here in New Zealand. And if you look at, I mean, Stephanie's status across the globe, there's great policies being implemented. People care about the language and people know that I'm not only just paying tax, but that tax comes back to be supporting who I am in the space. So if we're paying that, how can we make education a priority for languages, not just English, but other languages to support? And if you look at the data across the globe, what are the languages as part of New Zealand they really need to support first? So I guess the language strategy or the action plan and policy will help inform us where do we go from here? Because there's so much data. And I say, for example, language through translation, language through teaching, language through interpretation. There's data. Australia's done some great work. We can see that there is less expenses when people are translated through their languages or interpreted in their languages. They understand what they need to do. Example, the health sector. So there's good indication that there is help for the future when languages are reinforced and been supported so that our young kids know. And then to the point, they go in, they are confident in their language, but as they go through the education system, it's always emphasized, you have to speak English and learn the English language. And so they start to lose their identity and lose themselves. So I guess for me, the emphasis of top down, bottom up is if the top can emphasize from a governmental level to put those in, then it helps us and the community at the bottom to say, I am going to reconnect because I know that the government values me in the space and my identity, my language. So I guess this is where we need to really look. Through that policy, we'll create a pathway for employment. The tertiary education sector will have those highest level of language degrees because people know that I can do this and still come out and teach the language for my community, but also work in governmental areas. It's a language that people will know will be a value in the economic sense. And that's where I would love to see. How do we work together to put an economic value that we already know could be helpful in the business world as well?
In the absence of a national language strategy, what Aotearoa does have is language weeks, a lot of Pacific language weeks, but we've also got Chinese language week relatively recently. I'd be interested to hear from you all. I know it's very symbolic, but at least it is a week where we are about celebrating a language.
It's one thing for the Pacific languages. Chinese Language Week is controversial because it is often top down and from people from Pakeha who don't speak Chinese, so the faces of Chinese Language Week, and it is trying to answer to the People's Republic of China's embassy to focus on Mandarin when, in fact, New Zealand has a strong tradition of migrants who are speakers of Cantonese. We have speakers of Minnan and Hokkien and Hakka and so on. So it is, I believe, being called Chinese Languages Week, or there has been a bit of pushback on that. I'd need to double check. But certainly it has been a point of controversy. What I find interesting is that we do not have, for example, a Korean Language Week, a Thai Language Week, a Vietnamese Language Week, that these are languages that we should also be supporting within this, that in many of cases have significantly more speakers than some of the languages that have banded together to acknowledge this. And I think part of this has to do, obviously, with New Zealand's place in the Pacific, which is great. But I think we need to recognize that we sit not just within the South Pacific, we're in the Pacific. There are a lot of languages that we relate to that we should be fostering. And again, my partner, she was the principal of the Wellington Korean School, and seeing how some of this operates, that with some of these larger languages, it enters into new dynamics because increasingly you have I imagine that there are very few people from outside of Tonga, other maybe then within the Pacific, who are studying Tongan or Rotuman or whatever. But Korean has become one of the big languages at a global level that is finding new people who want to learn it. One of the things that I would say is I think there are a couple of key things is to maintain the resources that we have. We have such wonderful possibilities from our communities as a migrant nation, and just not losing what we have because it can add so much. And just with additional effort, I feel that we can hold on to some of these great potential ways of connection forward. The other thing I would just want to say is thinking also, because there are so many constituencies we're addressing, that at the same time, things can look pretty pessimistic in terms of getting our monolingual English speakers who are born here to say 80% of them really have no interest in learning anything other than English. Well, so be it. I think the world is, unfortunately, it's moving in that direction. However, one of the things I would say, it has never been a better time in human history for people who get it, who think it's exciting to learn a foreign language, the ability to engage with resources online. It gets better and better every year, even since post-pandemic. I could point you to all sorts of things that have made it better than ever before. So what we want to do is get younger people just passionate about the possibilities that can arise from engaging with other languages and cultures, and then mentor them rather than having classes. And we won't get them, majority of the students, but I think I see it regularly that the students who get it really get it. And I'm seeing, especially with lesser taught languages, students getting abilities that they never had before, even 10 years ago, because of the ability to consume and be exposed to other languages at your fingertips. You just get on YouTube and you can find, if it's Thai dramas that you want to watch, well, so be it. There it is. And it's great. That's an exciting possibility. So I don't want us to be too pessimistic about what's happening.
Yeah. It is great to have the Pacific languages because it gives us the language weeks with the Ministry for Pacific Peoples. It gives the community an opportunity to share in terms of visibility and who they are and their languages as well. And so that gives the whole of Aotearoa New Zealand to participate, learn a bit of the language as well. But that's just 1 week. It's not an everyday thing, but we want the languages to be an everyday learning and across institutions and platforms. And I think that's the main thing. As Stephen raised, digital will become a really where we keep resources and learning resources will be a key element for the future. Again, one of the key things is that if you look across our communities, what we find as well as our work in the Center for Pacific Languages that we don't have the finances to employ people full time. It complicates things and also doesn't give us enough support because people already got full-time jobs. And when you have those knowledge holders, the 1 week is great because the community comes together and share the language every year, but it hasn't given us enough resources to be able to maintain that for the future. Now, if we are to sort of look at documentation and all of this, again, we're at the mercy of our communities to share that as well. And we don't have the kind of people or the financial capability to support the work of that language space. Now, if we're going to move everything into the digital space, then we have to find enough support to do that. And so that, again, is always a challenge when it comes to our Pacific languages. Well, we have this language week, we have sign language, but after that, many people have forgotten it. And so what are pathways that we continuously embed the language is we do this at the center. We continue to teach the language. We are looking at other avenues that face-to-face, online, digital. We still haven't been able to have that financial support to document. And when you come to documentation, it needs filament, it needs editing, it needs a community coming together. And taking the knowledge of our people is one thing that I always say, we're at the mercy of them sharing, but we cannot pay for the knowledge of the people to share it. And that's a lot of time. If we look across jobs here, the industries that we work in, we are paid to do those jobs. But when we are taking from our people, we only can give, 100 appraisal card or a little koha here and there, but we haven't really valued the knowledge that we're taking away for the future. The only thing we can think of is that that knowledge survives. So again, it comes back to creating pathways for acknowledging and bringing the right people to do that. Language Weeks is great, and it's a great exposure, but we want to make sure that the Language Weeks is every day or every week, not just the week itself. And then people have forgotten. Yes, we've got 12 languages under the ministry for Language Weeks for Pacific, but there are other ways that we can continue, that people can reconnect. And also the thing, what is really interesting is that social media plays a really core part, and it's really the area that has compromised a lot of our languages, because people are just doing what they're doing, and impact on language learning becomes more at risk when languages are not shared and pronounced properly. And so, again, there's so much complexity in the space when it comes to other languages other than English. So this is where I think for me is there needs to be more than just Language Weeks. It's great, but it's only a starting point for our communities here. Yeah. I'll hand it off to Letuala for Yixia.
Just want to echo on what Itu have talked about, especially for us at CPL and how we celebrate Language Weeks. Yes, it is endorsed by the Ministry of Pacific Peoples and a lot of government departments, a lot of schools. And we've seen that, you know, celebrated here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. But it's only those that are on the poster. But what about other Language Weeks? My thinking is around if we are to have a national language policy and, you know, long-term planning, like, will these Language Weeks align with that if we are going to come up with a languages strategy? And is what happening at the moment in terms of funding, is that fit for purpose for all the languages? How are we going to align that with other things like the Independence Days? I know for a lot of the Pacific Island languages, we celebrate it for those weeks, but it shouldn't be a celebration just for that week. It should be every day. An example is, you know, Ngangana Samoa, Lea Whakatonga. They've got a lot of their people here in Aotearoa who speak the language. They go to the community events because the language is widely spoken. The language is widely spoken in the churches, in community events, in like kirikiti, Samoan cricket, you know, the language is there. Whereas Whaeang Rotuamta or Ne Taitai Ne Kiribas or Ne Ngana Tuvalu, we don't have the core population or events or big churches where the language is widely spoken. So if we talk about Language Weeks, this should be ongoing, not just for those Language Weeks. I think there is a sense of urgency for the government to have a look at, you know, what other effective strategies that can use or can work alongside learning institutions, not just schools, different learning institutions to help carry the work, because it's not enough just doing it for the week. And then we have people, you know, government departments or some schools or some organizations ring up, oh, CPL, can you please come and do a talk for Tonga Language Week or Cook Island Language Week? We'll go and do the talk, or we'll send some resources, and that's the last we hear from them until the following year. Is it working? Had there been any research or evaluation to see the Language Weeks working? I haven't seen any research, but what there should be more work done to support the likes of what we're doing or the learning of the languages, not just to celebrate it on that one week. And and when we talk about languages, we're not just talking about the learning of the language, the alphabet, the greetings, different protocols. We're also talking about the culture. You know, language and culture go hand in hand. If we are talking about greetings and different settings, that's when we bring in the culture, or what type of cultural event. So, yeah, there's lots of rich approaches that we can take. But again, do we have the support? Our nanas and our papas who are knowledge holders are passing on. What can we do to make sure that we capture their knowledge before they leave this world? How are we documenting things? How are we delivering? How are we reaching out to our communities? And I feel for our young people, our ECE people, that, you know, they're very eager because they're born in the homes where their languages are spoken, or Korean or Chinese or Mandarin, and then they go into school, then they start to, yeah. And there goes that trend of, you know, they say education starts at school, yes, and then it declines when they don't have the resources to help support their journey of their languages. But yeah, that's my take on language weeks.
We've touched on it a lot, I know, but it would be great just to hear what are the benefits of language learning? And I guess on the flip side, what are the costs if New Zealand doesn't get on board with prioritizing language learning a bit more?
We will lose identity. We will lose that engagement of who we are. And I know, you know, people will say, oh, it's not on the government to support languages. It, you know, it goes back to mum and dad or the home or the family. But you can have the home and the family, yeah, but what resources are there to support them? So if there's no support, we will lose the languages. Look at Rangahauniwi. There's only less than probably 10 of us who are able to speak the language fluently and can deliver it or can be able to teach it confidently. And it's sad. And the decline is growing. More and more people are being also born into mixed ethnicities. So, you know, half Niue, half Māori, and there goes the language declining as well. So what can we do to make sure that we are continuing this battle to make sure that our languages are not dying, that our languages are not waving us goodbye?
I'm probably just going to add in terms of when you think of if all of this are removed and there is no real support, then it goes back to the family or the community, and they will have to try and keep it alive. Now, the real challenge here, if you look at New Zealand's population, and I'm going to just look at data, when you look at data versus growth, the data for Pacific continues to grow. New Zealand-born Pacific people continues to grow in that area, and Pacific has got one of the lowest median age in terms of young people right now, and it's going to continue to grow in the next 20 years. So Stats New Zealand data shows us a trend that as New Zealand grows, it's going to get browner and browner in terms of population and population size, and also intermarriages within Pacific communities has continued to trend. The Asian community continues to grow. And so that trend tells us that if this comes out, if we don't do what we're doing now, then it's relying on the community. When we look at all of the knowledge holders and elders that are going to pass on in the next 5-10 years, that knowledge goes with them. What happens now is that a population that's really not going to be in their language space because of the predominance. And if government continues to push that English becomes a predominant language, then education system will take that pathway as well, which again is a whole risk for the future. And so there's going to be ongoing, as Stephanie raised right from the beginning, when they enter the school system, they may have spoken some language at home, but it will always be English. And if you look at how much time we spend in the workplace and also in schools, education from a year, let's say from preschool right up till secondary, we spend almost 2/3 of our lives in school and the workplace. And so if our languages are not going to be a priority, then you can imagine that New Zealand will grow to a space where no longer our languages is no longer going to exist. And that's the reality of it. It will only be probably in the digital world, but if it's not a priority, then there's no funding committed to creating those resources. That's a real challenge for us from a Pacific lens, is that as our communities grow, there is a real risk in the future that we will lose our language. And we can see that it continues to decline because a lot of our young people are in spaces that predominantly speaks English. Elders and this knowledge holders who holds the language skills continues to pass away.
if we allowed students to see themselves reflected in the school, that they could hear their language, they could see their culture within a school, then we know that they do better and that they really thrive. And that whole thrust for revitalisation of te reo Māori and te ao Māori within education has had really fabulous payoff, particularly in the kura kaupapa space. You know, those students in kura kaupapa are doing incredibly well and so much better than students, Māori students in mainstream schools, ordinary English medium schools. So that's the evidence that tells us that if you support language and culture for students, then they are going to do better and they're going to be better prepared for the future. They're going to well understand their own identity and their culture, and they're going to be able to thrive and thrive across the range of different cultures that we have in Aotearoa New Zealand. And so we, by reducing our education back to proficiency in English only, and that's, this government's really firm about that, they're only interested in literacy in English, we are doing all of those students a disservice. None of them are going to thrive, actually, because what they have through understanding their own culture and identity and language is that superpower that allows them to do well everywhere. And that's the tragedy of our current situation, that all of these students, by being encouraged to be monolingual, will not thrive as they should.
I guess one thing I would say, I'm imagining that anyone who has been watching our podcast now that we're an hour in is already quite convinced of the fact that languages are important and has a sense of what would be lost. So I think it's really an issue of concentrating on strategically, what are the best ways forward? What are the tactics we can use? One is getting a government on board and for people who are able to effectively lobby to somehow come together. That's one side. That's harder to control. What I wonder about is the stuff that can be done from within communities to keep things alive. That one of the things that I feel engages young people is when there's really good content. So we now have, for te reo Māori, there's all sorts of really great podcasts and things that you can listen to. There's stuff coming from the Samoan community. Where it gets difficult is for the much smaller communities, and to just try and encourage the people who have the skills, who have a little bit of pizzazz and don't mind becoming a content creator, to do some podcasts or some vlogging of traveling around and just speaking. And that can go kind of minorly viral within a community because the communities will contact, hey, have you seen this? And then it can help feed upon itself. So that would be something I'd like to see more of, or would encourage as just a possibility to think in those terms of creative work that can perhaps and then even engage outside the community. But stuff where people not just are teaching about the language, where they often use the medium for English, but just staying monolingually and maybe speaking at a relatively simple level, linguistic term, comprehensible input for the heritage speakers that they want to see that, and creating a body of that. And then one person gets on, does it on YouTube, and then somebody else in the community responds. And we just start to build up this repository of material. Maybe one of the things that we can do from within the inside in the absence of government support. That is a thought and suggestion I would have.
And if I could add to that too, I think another sort of small structural change that we could make is at the pre-service level. So at the moment, students, when they are training to be a teacher, don't have to learn any languages or anything like that. But we could make that a prerequisite and say, whilst you're training or before you enter pre-service training, you study an official language and one other or something like that, so that they come in with some sort of linguistic understanding of what it is to learn a second language and have some experience of that language that they could then apply to the classroom. just in most subjects, there is teacher supply issues. And most teachers are like my age, so they're heading for retirement, you know, there's not much time left. And they are not being replaced very much by younger people. But if we made a small change like that and that said, okay, you must study languages as part of your postgraduate diploma, that would then help meet that teacher supply very shortly and also might encourage people to become more involved with languages. I think that's a small structural change that we could make immediately.
I think from a Pacific lens, it will come down back to individuals and communities. How can they work very closely together to start implementing, you know, documentation of knowledge for the future, our elders and our knowledge holders? I guess working closely for us is creating a pathway that our young people gets be part of it. There's a lot of them that are keen in the language space, looking to the home countries as well to see how they can support in the space. If government is not going to be serious about it, then we have to undertake that work ourselves and put a little bit more effort and sacrifices to a pathway for the future.
One change I would really like to see is to raise the status of languages within the curriculum and to put some level of compulsion in there. And schools must provide instruction in a second language, languages must pay attention to official languages and so on, and not to leave it to chance. I think that would make a huge difference in terms of changing the status of languages within schools at least.
It's not even compulsory to learn Te Reo in school, is it?
None of them are compulsory. And so even though there's been this huge renaissance and take up in Te Reo Māori, when you look at the numbers of students that are doing it, at secondary level last year, there were 35,000 students enrolled in a Te Reo Māori course. The total number of students, though, in secondary schools in New Zealand is over 300,000. So that's still a very small group of people that have access to language learning. It's not good enough.
For universities, for teachers, it is compulsory to learn Te Reo if you're doing a bachelor, a three-year course. But then for those who are doing a one-year to get into secondary teaching, it's not compulsory to learn Te Reo. So I could have a bachelor of physical education degree, and then I do the 1 year at university. It's not compulsory for me to learn Te Reo, but like Stephanie said, it should be compulsory to learn at least Te Reo and a few other, you know, endangered languages as a start.
Probably one suggestion as well is immersion. I think that's the other part that can help, not just from a community level, but from an education level. What is the partnerships look like, let's say for Pacific, partnership with government education system, having an immersion program, not just here in Aotearoa, but back in the homeland. It looked like, are you going on a holiday, but you're also on a learning holiday. It's learning not just language, but learning about the land, the environment, the ocean. Those are the things that are going to reconnect our people and build probably a strong, and that's through funding from the New Zealand High Com and Ministry of Foreign Affairs, education as well. So I think immersion should be built into our education system as well, not just here in New Zealand, but looking back to our Pacific Islands to have that stronger relationship when we look at revitalization and sustainability for the future of our Pacific languages.
Very cool. I would like to say tēnā koutou. Thank you so much. This has been very wide-ranging, but it is a hugely complex space and there are so many different elements to consider. But I think in conclusion, we're very much saying something needs to be done. Languages are really important and Aotearoa is falling behind and needs to get on board with this. On that note, I'd encourage everybody who's listening to think about submitting on the proposed curriculum. Languages isn't the only thing under consideration, but obviously we would like you to be thinking about the languages component as well. Tēnā koutou, thank you all so very much.
Kia ora, thank you.
Kia ora, thank you.
Kia ora. Thank you.